Chapter 21. Wary of leaving telltale drag marks, they chose to leave the crate where it sat. Unintentionally, they'd dropped it in an ideal location, a dry rivulet near the riverbank. They covered it with scrub brush and then, using bundled foliage to obscure their tracks, they backwalked off the sandbar to solid ground and into a copse. 100 feet inside the tree line, they found a 10-by-10-foot depression, surrounded by fallen logs. It gave them a vantage point of not only the crate, but the open ground down to the beach. After probing the area with the muzzles of the rifles to drive off any snakes or sundry creepy crawlies, they settled into their bolt hole. While Sam kept an eye out for visitors, Remy took inventory of their packs. "Remind me to send a thank-you letter to Ziploc," she said. "Most everything is dry. The satellite phone looks okay." "How much battery life?" "Enough for one call, maybe two." Sam checked his watch. It was just after 2 in the morning. It might be time to take Ed Mitchell up on his offer. Remy fished Mitchell's card out of her pack and handed it over. Sam dialed. A gravelly-voiced Mitchell picked up on the 4th ring.
"Yeah.
Ed, it's Sam Fargo."
"Huh?"
"Sam Fargo. Your Mafia Island charter a couple days ago."
"Oh, yeah. Hey, what the hell time is it?"
"About 2. I don't have much time. We need an evac."
"That's a word I ain't heard in a while. You in trouble?"
"You could say that."
"Where you at?"
"On the mainland, about 4.5 miles due east of Big Sicuti," Sam replied, then gave him a description of the area.
"You guys get around," Mitchell said. "Hang on a minute."
Sam heard the sounds of paper crinkling, then silence. Mitchell came back on the line.
"You know you're sitting smack dab in the middle of crocodile hell, don't you?"
"We do now."
"Can't get a fixed wing in there. I'll have to use a helo. That'll take a little doing."
"We'll make it worth your while."
"I know you will, but that's not my worry. I probably won't get there until just after sunrise. Can you hang on?"
"We'll have to," Sam said.
"Are folks going to be shooting at me when I get there?"
"No guarantees." There was 10 seconds of silence, then Mitchell chuckled.
"Oh, what the hell. Life's a daring adventure or nothing at all."
Sam laughed at this.
"It is indeed."
"Okay, keep your heads down. I'll be there at first light. Just in case I've got some competition at the LZ, I'll drop blue smoke so you don't shoot at me."
Sam disconnected.
Beside him, Remy said, "Here, drink." Sam turned, took a deep gulp from the canteen, then accepted a piece of beef jerky. He recounted his conversation with Mitchell. Remy said, "That man's on our permanent Christmas list. So he'll be here in another 4 or 5 hours.
With luck."
They sat in silence, chewing for several minutes. Sam checked his watch.
"It's been 40 minutes since we left the island."
"You don't think they..." Sam held up his hand. Remy went quiet. After a few moments, she said,
"I hear them. 2 of them, somewhere offshore."
Sam nodded.
"Hard to tell, but it sounds like the Rinkers."
"We'd better assume so."
"How far inland are we?"
"A 1/4 mile, maybe a little more." They listened for a few more minutes. The sound of the engines rose in volume, then suddenly went silent.
"They're ashore," Sam said.
They checked their weapons. 2 AK-74s, one with a full magazine, the other missing the dozen or so rounds Remy had fired at the Cushman, the 357 Magnum, and the H&K P-30. Whether these would be enough should a firefight erupt was an unknown. They'd been lucky so far with Rivera and his men, but neither Sam nor Remy were under any illusion. In a head-to-head contest, they had little chance of besting Special Forces soldiers.
"Let's get comfortable," Sam said.
"And invisible," Remy added.
After shoving their packs under a rotting log and covering them with loam, They did the same for themselves, lying lengthwise, head to head, so that each of them could see the approaches from the beach. Sam handed Remy a handful of mud to cover her face, then smeared some on his own.
"Promise me something, Sam," Remy said, slathering herself.
"A suite at the Mavenpick?" he guessed. "I was going to say a hot shower and a big breakfast, but since you offered, I've been composing a list."
Peering through a gap between the logs, Remy spotted a speck of light a few hundred yards to the east. She tapped Sam on the shoulder, mouthed "flashlight," and pointed. The flashlight beam seemed to float through midair, disappearing and reappearing through the trees as the owner picked his way inland.
"I'll say this much for Rivera," Sam whispered. "He's like a dog with a bone."
"He's probably said the same thing about us, but in less congenial language.
Are we waiting until we see the whites of their eyes?"
"No. We're crossing fingers they don't even wander this way."
"Why wouldn't they?"
"In Africa, darkness and forest equals predators."
"I could have done without that tidbit."
"Sorry."
As if on cue, somewhere in the distance they heard the deep-throated huff, huff, huff of a big cat. It was a sound they'd both heard before, but either on organized safaris or from the safety of a lodge. Here, in the open and alone, the sound was chilling.
Sam whispered, "It's a long way off."
Soon a second flashlight joined the first, then a third, and a fourth. The men were moving in a line abreast, like flushers leading a hunting party. Soon the party was close enough that Sam and Remy could see the figures behind the flashlights. Not surprisingly, each man appeared to be carrying an assault rifle. Another 5 minutes brought the group to the sandbar, where they converged. One of the men, Rivera, perhaps, appeared to do most of the talking, gesturing first up and down the shoreline, then inland. They shined their flashlights along the bank and over the water. Twice the beams appeared to skim over the helicopter blade jutting from the water, but it generated no response. Suddenly, one of the men pointed across the river. Almost in unison, each of the men unslung his rifle.
"They spotted our fanged friends," Remy whispered.
Weapons up and ready, the group backed off the sandbar until they were on the scrub ground. They conferred for another minute, then separated, one pair walking downriver, the other upriver. This was the pair Sam and Remy watched closely. As the river abutted the copse's northern edge, the pair's path would take them within 50 feet of the hiding spot.
Sam whispered, "I took a look as we flew in. The nearest crossing is a mile downstream. Now we'll see how determined they are."
Clearly wary of what other dangers the river might hold, the two men kept a safe distance from shore, walking from left to right across Sam and Remy's field of vision until the river curved east and merged with the copse. Here they turned southeast, shining their flashlights along the tree line as they walked. Now only 20 yards away, their figures were more distinct. One of them was more distinct than the other. Tall and gaunt, he moved with the economical, purposeful gait of a soldier. It was Itzli Rivera. Suddenly Sam felt clawed feet crawling over his ankle. Before he could resist the impulse, he kicked his foot. The unseen creature squealed and skittered off through the underbrush. Rivera stopped suddenly and held up a closed fist, the soldier's universal hand signal for halt. His partner stopped in his tracks, and in unison they slowly dropped to one knee. The flashlights were doused. Each man's head began rotating, looking, listening. The flashlights popped back on again and began skimming over the trees, pausing occasionally here and there. Rivera looked over his shoulder and gestured something to his partner. Together they stood up, turned, and began picking their way into the trees, heading directly for Sam and Remy's hiding spot. Sam felt Remy's hand on his shoulder. He reached up, gave it a reassuring squeeze. Rivera and his partner kept coming. They were 30 feet away. Now, 20 feet. 10 feet. They stopped, looked left and right, and flashlight beams probed the gaps between the logs around Sam and Remy. Twigs cracked. Rivera whispered something to his partner. Sam and Remy felt the log over their heads sink a couple inches. The tips of a pair of boots appeared at the edge of the log, and a flashlight beam swept over the depression. 5 long seconds passed. The flashlight clicked off. The boots pulled back, followed by a double thump as Rivera dismounted the log. Slowly, the footfalls faded. Sam counted to 100, then slowly lifted his head until he could see through the gap. Silhouetted by the glow of their flashlights, Rivera and his partner were back at the tree line and moving south toward the sandbar. Sam watched them for another minute and turned his head so his mouth was closer to Remy's ear. "They're moving off. We'll stay put in case they double back." For the next 20 minutes they remained still, wedged as tightly as possible in their bolt hole, until finally they heard in the distance the Rinker's engines growling back to life. Sam whispered, "Just a little longer." He gave it another 5 minutes, then rolled out from under the log. "I'm going to have a look around." He crawled out of the depression and disappeared. He returned 10 minutes later. "They're gone." He helped Remy out from her hiding spot. She exhaled heavily.
"That bell better be worth it."
"Another few hours, and we're home free." Ed Mitchell was as good as his word, if not a little better. Just as the sun was peeking through the forest to the east, they heard the thump of helicopter rotors. As a precaution, Sam and Remy scrambled back into their bolt holes, occasionally peeking out as the rotors grew louder. To the west, they saw a yellow and white Bell helicopter sweep in over the beach and turn inland, following the course of the river. When the helicopter reached the sandbar, the pilot's door opened. A moment later, blue smoke began drifting over the ground. Sam and Remy rolled out together and stood up. Sam asked, "Ready for home?" Remy shook her head, and he chuckled. "Right. Sorry. Hot shower and breakfast." An hour later, with the crate strapped safely to the Bell's deck, they touched down at the Ras Kutani airstrip. While Mitchell trotted off to collect his vehicle for the ride back to Dar es Salaam, Sam and Remy used the sat phone to place a long-overdue call to Selma.
"Where have you been?" their chief researcher said over the speaker. "I've been sitting by the phone."
"Is that your way of saying you were worried about us?" Remy asked.
"Yes, it is. Now explain yourselves."
Sam briefly recounted the last few days, ending with their recovery of the Bell. Selma sighed.
"I wish I could say positively you haven't wasted your time."
"What do you mean?" Sam asked.
"We got the first shipment from Morton's museum yesterday. In with the miscellanea, we found what looks like a journal of sorts. Blaylock's journal, to be exact."
"That's good news," Remy said, then added tentatively, "Right?"
"It would be," Selma replied, "if not for the fact that I'm pretty sure Winston Lloyd Blaylock, the Mbogo of Bagamoyo, was certifiably insane."